20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL and the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you guys joining me, as always, 365 days a year right here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. We are 2 weeks away from the first round of the NFL draft. We are 2 weeks and one day away from the Packers' first selection in the 2026 NFL draft. It is a little bit weird still not having a first round pick. I'm still very excited about the fact that the Packers do not have a first round pick, because it means that they have Micah Parsons. But we are obviously gearing up for what's going to be a very important second round pick for Green Bay at pick 52. Maybe they move up a little bit. Maybe they move down a little bit. As I've talked about before, I think they probably end up somewhere in that 47 to 55, 56 range. I don't think they're going to move up too much or back too far. And most likely they pick at pick 52. And today we're going to be going over some edge players that could potentially be in play for Green Bay at 52. Before we get there, just a couple things. As I mentioned on the last couple shows, we are now available on Spotify video. So if you haven't checked that out yet, make sure to do so. It's the same show if you're on YouTube or if you're on an audio channel somewhere else. It's the same thing, right? There's no difference. But if you are a Spotify user and you'd prefer it to be on video rather than audio, you can check that out over there. So again, if you haven't done so yet, make sure to do so. No real news from a Packers standpoint. We're still waiting on Jonathan Gannon and, you know, a defensive coordinator, introduction. Of course, Acord and the special teams coordinator and any other new coaches have also not been introduced by Green Bay yet. Probably is going to be something that takes place after the draft at this point. We'll have to wait and see, but it is still pretty remarkable to me that we are. I think Aaron Nagler posted something where it's been 70 days now since they've hired Jonathan Gannon and we have not heard from him, which again, just seems rather crazy, but here we are. And again, now it seems like maybe it's going to be after the draft until we actually do end up hearing from him. But that's sort of our main topic. I guess one thing other really quick, we do have happy hour coming up on Friday, so make sure to check that out. Also, I have had a lot of people asking me if I'm going to be doing the live shows for the NFL draft. I am going to be doing them right here in my office. I'll do the full first round, full second and third rounds. Not sure yet if I'm going to have what guests or things like that. I'll have to sort of finalize that here in the coming week or so. But we'll have obviously breakdowns of the draft picks on the channel as well. There's going to be a ton of stuff. So great preview shows prior to the draft. We're going to do a Wednesday live show. We'll probably do shows Thursday and Friday during the day as well. There's going to be a ton of live draft content and then a lot of just breakdowns of stuff that actually happened as well that will be in more of the longer form videos and things like that. So going to be great. I cannot wait for it. I'm already geared up and I'm sure you guys are excited as well. So live shows Thursday, Friday, Wednesday, Saturday, they'll be all of them. So make sure to keep an eye out for that as well. That does, again, with no news, allow us to jump right into our main topic for today, which is going to be the potential for the Green Bay Packers to select an edge rusher in the second round with that 52nd pick, or again, maybe up a little bit or down a little bit. I've talked about this a lot. I think defensive end is still a real legitimate area of need for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, the Packers did in fact lose Rashawn Gary and Kingsley Enagbare. You may not like Rashawn Gary, maybe you do, but a lot of Packers fans were ready to be done with the Rashawn Gary era in Green Bay. I was ready to be done with the Rashawn Gary era in Green Bay, but he still played a good chunk of snaps, had pressures, was a really good run defender. That still is a loss for this team. And Kingsley Enagbare, again, your mileage may vary for how you feel about the loss of Kingsley Enagbare. I think Baron Sorrell is going to do a pretty good job replacing him, but that's still those two combined over 1,200 snaps a season ago. That's a lot of snaps to replace in one offseason. And at this point in time, they have not added anything to the roster at defensive end to replace either of those players. And that would probably be okay if you were going into the season with Micah Parsons, LVN, and then you've got Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, Aaron Mosby, Brenton Cox. I think I said Brenton Cox, but in case I didn't. So Micah, LVN, Sorrell, Cox, Oliver, and Mosby. If you've got those six, and they're all healthy, you probably feel fine. You know, in fact, Mosby's probably a practice squad guy to start the season. You probably even feel pretty good with just the five of Micah, LVN, Baron Sorrell, Breton Cox, and Colin Oliver, hoping that, you know, Cox, Oliver, and Sorrell take some sort of jump and are ready to fill in those spots. I think you can feel mostly comfortable with that. But of course, it's not just that. Micah Parsons is going to be out to start the season. And when he does come back, I'm assuming there's going to be at least a period of time, maybe it's a week, maybe it's 4 weeks, maybe it's longer, that he is on a little bit more of a snap count. And so you don't have a fully functioning Micah Parsons in all likelihood to start the season, and probably for a little bit of time after that while he ramps back up. And so you are right now going into the season. If the season started today, Micah's not available to play, obviously. You've got LVN and I guess Baron Sorrell as your two edge rushers. And then you've got probably Breton Cox and Colin Oliver and Aaron Mosby backing up. That doesn't feel like enough. Like LVN, you probably don't want to be your number one. Baron Sorrell or Breton Cox or whoever it is, probably you don't feel like is good enough to be your two. Heck, even Cox and Oliver don't feel good enough to necessarily be your three or four. Maybe Oliver is your four or Cox is your four you feel okay with, but overall, you just don't feel like you have the edge players that you need to succeed at a high enough level. Now, it is for just a small period of time until Micah comes back and then he sort of sets everything into place. But you still have to, you know, get wins and get victories in those first handful of games while Micah is either out or ramping up. You can't just be like, well, we'll get him back eventually. You don't want to start, you know, 1-3 in those first four games without Micah. You better be able to get to the quarterback. And right now I have real questions as to whether or not that's something that they're going to be able to do until Micah gets back. Now, whether or not a second round pick would, you know, functionally fix that and make it so that you have a much more dynamic pass rush group, the answer is probably not, but it certainly doesn't hurt. It certainly adds another body to that group that can come and compete and give you a different flavor of edge player that I think is going to be very important for this team to have. So that is a huge piece of this as well. The other thing I'll just add on top of this too is I do think it makes a lot of sense for Green Bay to add an edge player in the second or third round if you can find a good one in this draft. Once you get to day three, I think it sort of craters your need for an edge player. You don't really need another Baron Sorrell. You don't really need another Colin Oliver. Those guys need reps in order to get better. You don't need to add now another developmental piece in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round that's just going to come in and, you know, compete against Sorrell and Oliver and Breton Cox. Let those three get their snaps. You don't need another one of those. You need somebody to be probably a tier ahead of them. And so if you can find that, I think it's worthwhile. And I'll say, I said it to Justice. It's not that they can't take another edge rusher rounds 4, 5, 6, 7. If they really like one, by all means, go for it. If somebody falls to them, by all means, go for it. But that's probably a little bit less what you need at the moment and more somebody to legitimately take, maybe even the starting job while Micah recovers from injury. It could be LVN and a second round pick that are your starters going into the season. That's within the realm of possibility. One last thing I'll add here is, on almost every position on this roster, there's like one of those, like, you know, Damian Martinez, or there's a, you know, Jacoby Keeney James at wide receiver, or a Drake Dabney at tight end. There's one of those type of players, right? This is the one position that really doesn't have it. It is just six guys right now. And again, Micah's hurt. So it is Micah, LVN, Baron Sorrell, Breton Cox, Colin Oliver, and Aaron Mosby. Those are the only six edge players on the entire roster. There's no random guy that you've never heard of that's just chilling out there, even as a camp body. They don't have a ton of depth in general at that position. So this is a position that you could use a starter in the near term, probably competition for LVN. And the last thing too, LVN, fifth year option coming up. I think they're going to pick that up. But even still, you know, year after that, you're looking at having to probably give him a pretty big extension. Those are all things that go into this decision and why a defensive end, or in this case, I guess I should say an edge rusher, since they're again likely going to play a 3-4, is really, or at least should really be in play for Green Bay early on in this draft. One other thing I should note, edge rushers in the second round have not gone great as of late. Now, last year's draft, I'm still intrigued by some. Donovan Azaraku had a pretty solid season. He started strong, tapered off at the end. I still think he's going to be a really good player. JT Tuimalo for the Colts. Nick Scorton had a pretty solid year for the Panthers. Not great, certainly not terrible. Oluwafemi Oladejo, not to be confused with Obafemi, but if you know, you know. Oluwafemi Oladejo, he didn't do much at all last year. Marshawn Kneeland and Chris Braswell the year before that. Derek Hall, Isaiah Foskey, BJ Ojulari, Keon White, Tuli Tuipulotu. Those were the ones the year before that. And then Arnold Ebiketie, Boye Mafe, David Ojabo, Josh Pascal, Sam Williams, Drake Jackson. And then thankfully, the saving grace on this list, Nick Benito, is really the big name to know from these second round edge rushers as of late. Then the year before that, Azeez Ojulari, Dayo Odenigbo, and Boogie Basham. It has not gone great. Guys not getting second contracts. And, you know, I think Azaraku is going to be good. Obviously, Benito has been fantastic. Boye Mafe just got a big deal this offseason. But the edge rusher in round two has not gone great as of late. It doesn't mean anything. Maybe it's due, right? Maybe every edge rusher that goes round two this year is going to be epic. You never know. But overall, it's been a bit of a problem as of late. It has not amounted to a ton at that position. We're going to be going over, I think it's what, 6 players today. And again, as we went over recently with nose tackles and defensive tackles, I'm not doing like huge deep dives on all of these. I'm just giving my notes of what I saw on tape recently. I do want to bring up 3 names that we're not going to be discussing today. TJ Parker, Cassius Howell, and Kendrick Faulk. These are 3 players that I personally don't have them in the first round. I think there's a good chance that 2, maybe all 3 of them go in the first round, but I don't love all like those 3 as first round values. It wouldn't stun me if one of or 2 even of those players fell into the second round. That said, I don't think there's any chance that any of those 3 players are in play at 52. I expect all 3 of them to be long gone by pick 52. So I actually have those 3 players ranked very similarly to the first 3 players that are on my list that we're going to talk about today. As I talked about with Justice, I would rather spend a second round pick on one of these other defensive linemen or edge players than either Parker, Howell, or Faulk in the first round. That's just how I feel about it. And in fact, I think Green Bay could actually get as good, if not a better player at 52 than maybe some of these teams taking an edge player in round 1. We'll be right back. All right, let's start off our conversation today with Zion Young. Zion Young has been a much bandied about potential player for the Packers at pick 52. Could be gone. Certainly think there's a chance that he's there. Could last a little bit past Green Bay, but he feels like somebody in like the 40 to 55 range. If I just had to, kind of put a stretch of numbers on it. We've got 6'5.5", 262 pounds, a 7.67 relative athletic score, did not do the agility testing or the bench press, had a poor 10-yard split. Let's just pause it right there. When you're looking at edge players, the 10-yard split is something to really keep an eye on. You do not want a bad 10-yard split. One of the real true superpowers of a lot of the really good edge rushers is a quick explosive step off the line. And that allows you to, get up and start engaging with the offensive player, the offensive lineman, before they might be, ready for it. They might be a little bit more lumbering out of their stance. If you can explode out of your stance and start getting into that first step and start getting hands into them before they can engage you, that is a huge advantage. Or you burst off the line and start getting around them if you're an edge player and it's a offensive tackle that, again, maybe they've got a long step or maybe they take those like tiny little jab steps and all of a sudden you're exploding out and you can bend around them. There are huge, huge advantages to that. And on the flip side, if you've got an offensive tackle that can explode out of their stance and your edge player is slow out of his stance, guess what? They're going to engage you first. And before you even start getting into using your hands or, getting where you want to go, you've got an offensive tackle that's on you, and that's not ideal either. So that the other thing with that 10-yard split, it's not an exact correlator, but usually there's some explosiveness that it shows there too. And usually you want that to translate to exploding to the quarterback. And I'll just tell you right up front, that explosion to the quarterback that closing ability is not there for Zion Young, certainly not at a high level. And that first step off the line is an issue for him. So those are two things that he has to overcome. He turned 22 in March, has almost 1,800 career snaps in college, had 57 pressures in 2025, 112 for his career, had 8 sacks in 2025 and 14 in his career. He took a huge jump in productivity in 2025 overall. As talked about, he lacks explosion and burst, and the vertical testing confirmed that as well. Again, that burst and explosiveness that you're hoping to see from this player, he just does not have it. Doesn't close quickly or change direction. I would say it's an okay COD change of direction. It's not anything dynamic, I'd put it that way. He's on the ground too much, which is something that I was a little bit surprised by, especially based on his demeanor. That's something he's got to get a little bit more cleaned up, stay on balance a little bit better. You can't do anything helping your team when you're on the ground. He has good length, the ability to use a long arm and collapse pockets, had a 9.3% run stop rate, a 25.6% win rate on true pass sets, which is good. He's got a good rip move, super strong hands, very strong upper body. He'll attack half the body and just overpower the offensive tackle with raw strength. Has a nice spin move that he can use, and they did kick him inside a little bit, which is a nice little bonus as well. Has a very powerful bull rush. Has impressive lateral agility, which you wouldn't expect. He actually has a little quick step inside that sort of catches you by surprise. You don't expect it from him. Again, the testing would say it's not, he doesn't have that quickness, but it does show on tape. It's almost like just a change of pace that he throws in there, and it kind of catches people off guard. And because of that, I think it looks maybe a little bit quicker than maybe even it is, but he showed the ability to have that lateral agility and to win inside. He's got a very, very intense mentality. He exudes energy and exudes toughness. More on that momentarily. I don't think he has a full pass rush plan figured out yet, but the bull rush is a really good start, and how he just kind of gets on people right away and kind of wants to go right through their face. Actually, there's my next note. He wants to run right through their face. If you're looking for that super dynamic, explosive player that's going to bend around the edge and explode to the quarterback and is going to have those quick wins, I don't think Zion Young is going to be your cup of tea. If you're looking for somebody that, we talk about that relative a-hole score here at the Pack-A-Day podcast, somebody that's going to add some piss and vinegar to your defense, that's going to play with violence and intensity and just bring the juice and bring energy and be a leader, he has all of that in spades. He's going to set the edge in the run game. He's going to do all the dirty work. He's going to run through your face. He's going to collapse pockets. It's not maybe going to always result in sacks for him, but it's going to help guys like Micah Parsons, LVN, Devontae Wyatt, Javon Hargrave, because that quarterback's not going to have an escape. That offensive tackle is going to be pushed back into the quarterback. He's a really fun player. He's a really, really fun player. I would argue, and I would say, like, normally this type of player is not my general cup of tea. I like that explosiveness. I like that closing ability. I wish he had it. If he had that explosive closing ability, he's a top 5 pick in this draft. He just doesn't. All right, so that's what's lacking. He has kind of everything else you need. Again, you'd like a little bit better of a pass rush plan, but he can come in and help any team right away because he's going to be a good run defender, and he's willing to, try to bull rush and collapse pockets. And he's not a glory hog, right? He's not somebody that's just, taking his easiest pathway to the quarterback, but it's opening up lanes elsewhere. He's a good teammate. Like I said, does a lot of the dirty work. And just the violence and intensity he plays with, I think would be a very, very welcome addition to the Packers defense. Next up, Gabe Akos, 6'4", 260, will turn 22 in May, had a 9.59 relative athletic score, but did not do the explosive testing and did not do the agility testing. So it's a completely incomplete relative athletic score. Had a 4.65 40-yard dash, though, 78.0 PFF grade this past year, had 41 pressures in 2025, 44 in 2024, and 142 pressures for his career. Had 12 sacks in 2025, 8 in 2024, and 28 for his career. Had a 1.59 10-yard split, which is in the 94.6 percentile at edge. This is the opposite here, right? We talked about it with Zion Young. He didn't have that quick first step and that 10-yard split that showed the explosive ability. Gabe Akos has it. He has it very, very much so. And he will explode off the line, and then he just gets relentless from there. So you love to see that 10-yard split. And that was my next note too, just relentless in pursuit. He does not give up. He will work all day long. Doesn't matter how long the play is going to go. He is going to work. He's going to explode off the line. He has quick, powerful hands. He has some violent hits at the point of attack where he just wipes quarterbacks and running backs out. He can dip and kind of bend around the edge a little bit. It's on tape. He didn't do it a ton, but there is evidence of it on tape. I don't think that's ever going to be who he truly is as a player, but there is a little bit of evidence of it on tape. He's strong enough at the point of attack in the run game. I don't have any concerns there. He actually reminded me a little bit of Rashawn Gary, but with that actual relentless motor. He actually has the relentless motor. So if you would take like this last year's version of Rashawn Gary, and again, obviously Gary's a proven veteran and just in general is the better player of the two. But what I think Acosta can become, take Gary's overall skill level, not like prime Rashawn Gary, but what we saw the overall skill level in 2025 from Rashawn Gary, but now add a relentlessness to him. I think that's kind of, to me, what Gabe Acosta can be. He's got a wrestling background, which is just music to any scout's ear or coach's ear. When you hear that in the trenches and they have that wrestling background, that is usually a huge advantage. Was on Bruce Feldman's freak list, 24.1% win rate in true pass sets, played over 2,200 snaps, which again, you love to see. Does have smaller arms. I did not think that his smaller arms affected him on tape. I didn't think it dealt him any issues whatsoever. So you want to note it, but I think it's always important when you have like a negative, because we do it all the time with positives and we'll say like, yeah, he tested well, but, or he did this, but, or what, there's always that. I also think, you know, when you are noting the negatives, be cognizant of like, does it affect his game? And yes, he has short arms. It should be noted, but I didn't think it affected him on tape. I didn't think it was an issue for him whatsoever. He's been a team captain, has a very strong chop move. I could use more counters and a more diverse pass rush arsenal. That's every edge rusher in every draft is going to say that to some extent. You'd love these guys to be a little bit more polished and have more moves. That's just not it. I guess Ezeraku was the opposite of that last year. He had a billion moves in his arsenal, but more often than not, you'd always like to see a little bit more. And then, I think he's going to be a very long-term player based off of his traits, effort, and violence. And if you have those three things, if you've got good traits, great effort, and play with a level of violence and just relentlessness, you're usually going to be good in this league. I think he'd be a really fun addition to this edge room. I think he'd be a good player to have on the opposite side of Micah Parsons because they're both going to be relentless. I think it would be a fun duo. I really do. And obviously you still have LVN, so I guess trio in this scenario, but I like Acosta a lot. I would have no issue with either Zion Young or Acosta at pick 52. And I would have, these are in order for where I have them ranked right now. Card subject to change prior to the draft, but I have Zion Young first on my list of edge rushers here in the second round. I have Acosta second. I'll just tell you right now, a lot of these are like right next to each other. If you want to put Acosta ahead of Zion Young, I would have no issue with it whatsoever. Next up is Derek Moore, 6'4", 255. 23 years old, will turn 24 in December. So he is going to be a little bit overaged, which you don't love. You would prefer these guys are coming out at age 21, 22, maybe 23. But again, he's going to be 24 in December. Had an 89.9 PFF grade this past year, 41 pressures in 2025, 37 in 2024, and 118 in his career. Had 11 sacks this past year, did not have a relative athletic score, only had a 34th percentile vertical jump and a 60th percentile broad jump. My notes on Moore, he plays compact and powerful with very good bursts. He's like a little stick of dynamite. He's not small, right? He's 6'4", 255, but it feels compact and it feels powerful in the way that he plays. He packs a pop. It almost feels like he's harnessing an energy and then just boom, it just gets let out all at once. He doesn't give you a ton of surface area to block. So he stays pretty low. He gets pretty small and he doesn't like you're trying to get your hands inside on him. And it's tough to do. He does a really good job of avoiding that and making it so that he's going to be the one that's dictating terms a little bit more. As a very quick first step, he will get into you immediately. So he's going to get off that first step and then boom, he's on you. He's on you and you better be ready to fight because he is going to try to bull rush you. He will try to run right through you. He's going to play with that intensity. and you love it. And again, he's quick off the line. And if you're just like dazed for a second, he's going to run right through you. He's absolutely going to run right through you. He has a quick inside move. He's going to make every single rep difficult for you. He's a pain in the ass to have to block. That's the best compliment I give him. He's an absolute pain to have to block. Had a 36% win rate on true pass set, like plays. That's incredible. That's an incredible number. Does not give up on the play. He's not the strongest player in run defense. I'll just say that right now. And that's going to be an issue. He might be more of a obvious pass down player, and he's going to have to work to get in on rundowns, which is not ideal. I'll just put it that way. He will run right through your body. If you expose your chest at all, he's going to find a way to take advantage and use the leverage game. He does have great closing burst, and there's nothing too fancy about what he does, but what he does works. It's a lot of the same stuff over and over and over again, but he's coming at you quick first step. He's going to get into your body, try to bull rush you. It's a little stick of dynamite, and he doesn't give you surface area to block. All of a sudden, before you know it, he's at the quarterback. It's not the flashiest, but it is extremely, extremely effective. All right, next up, we've got Malachi Lawrence. 6'4", 253. He's going to turn 23 in July. 80.1 PFF grade this past year. 40 pressures in 2025. 96 in his career. Had 7 sacks in 2025 with 21 in his career. Had an 89.5 pass rush grade in 2025. A 9.95 relative athletic score. Didn't do bench or agility testing. Had a 97.6% 10-yard split. So again, showing that explosiveness, like the ability to immediately be quick right out of your break, right? Right out of your stance. Had a 99 percentile vertical jump and a 99.3% broad jump. His athletic comps per RAS were Danielle Hunter, Brian Burns, and Josh Sweat. That's a hell of a trio to be grouped with. Once he wins, the burst is insane. It is insane. If he gets around the offensive tackle, it's like, boom, he's at the quarterback. He is there in a flash, and you love to see that closing speed. He is a little bit stiff in his change of direction. I didn't love how UCF used him. I would like to see him used a little bit more in almost like a wide nine or even standing up. They kind of kicked him a little bit too much inside at times, and I did not think that that was the best use of his abilities. He has all the tools to be a really good player, but it's going to need a little bit of work. He has 35-inch arms, which are fantastic. He's got the length, a 36% win rate in true pass sets, had a 4.2% stop rate, one of the worst in the class for the edge rush group. Does flash a little bit of a Euro step and a counter move, has small hands, and will need to do a much better job of converting speed to power in the NFL. So let's break down Lawrence a little bit. He's got all the traits, right? If you don't have a really good bull rush, it makes it really hard. Offensive tackles in the NFL are just too smart to you. They're going to just sit on all of your other moves, and they know that you're not going to run through their chest, and now they can kind of cheat a little bit. And so the first thing that Lawrence has to do is learn to convert speed to power and bull rush some offensive tackles, because if not, they're just going to set on, you know, if you think of a pitcher in baseball, right? If you don't have a fastball that works, if you can't locate your fastball, they're just going to sit on your off-speed pitches, right? And now your off-speed pitches don't work because they're sitting on it. They don't think that you're going to be able to locate your fastball. And in this case, with Malachi Lawrence, he can't convert speed to power and use a bull rush. So they're just going to kind of sit on all of his, you know, other moves to try to get past. And again, offensive tackles are really, really good at shutting that down. Again, love the traits. I think he's just going to take a little bit of fine tuning. If you told me that Lawrence ended up being a freak and one of the top edge players in this class, he has that ability. You're betting aggressively on it in the second round. He could even end up going first, again, just based on his traits, but I'd be a little bit more hesitant. If it's a third round pick, I like Lawrence a lot. In the second, I think there might end up being better options than him, honestly. Justice and I talked about that earlier this week as well. He was kind of in the same boat, but yeah, it's crazy because you've got athletic testing. You had, you know, what, 40 pressures and, you know, 7 sacks this past year. That's not bad in college. It looks like the total package, but you watch the tape and it just kind of consistently leaves you wanting a little bit more. Next up, we have R. Mason Thomas. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this because he's a good player. I just don't think he's anything like a Packers type at all. He's 6'4", if he was 6'4", we wouldn't be talking about that. He's 6'2", .241, 7.23 relative athletic score, but didn't do the bench or the short shuttle. Had a 52nd percentile three cone despite being on the smaller side. Would have liked to have seen that be a little bit better. Plays with extremely sound leverage, plays bigger than his size, has a 35.1% win rate on true pass sets, which is, again, a really, really good rate. Has had a few nagging injuries that he's had to deal with, so you got to be a little bit cognizant of that. He's not a big-time run defender, has a quick first step, and speed shows up on tape in a variety of different ways. Does use a long arm and a bull rush, and both of them are effective. Keeps working to the quarterback, running back, and does not give up on plays. And the lack of length is definitely a little bit concerning, and it shows up on tape. I like our Mason Thomas a little bit less than I think some, but bottom of the second round type of pick. 52 would probably be a little bit rich for me, especially with what they normally look at. I don't think he fits the defense perfectly, but he's a good football player, and somebody's going to draft him and be very happy with him. We'll be right back. And then last but not least is Danny Dennis Sutton, DDS, if you will. 6'6", 256, 33.5-inch arms, 80.1 PFF grade, 1919 career snaps. 1919 Kitchen and Tap, for those of you who don't know, who is the bar and grill that's inside Lambeau Field, the restaurant that's inside. So he has 1919 career snaps, 51 pressures in 2025 with 8 sacks, 45 pressures in 2024 with 9 sacks, has 147 career pressures, 25 career sacks, 22 years old, turns 23 in December, had a 9.96 relative athletic score, did everything except the testing, 98 percentile vert, 99 percentile broad jump, 98 percentile three cone, 94th percentile speed, it's a 40-yard dash. His athletic comps were Daniil Hunter, Javon Kearse, Mike Mamula, Malachi Lawrence, and Odafe Owe. It's, again, very good group to be with. First issue, maybe one of the biggest issues for Danny Dennis Sutton, he exposes so much of his chest in both the run and pass game. If you're wondering what that means, it means that he doesn't play with great level. He's way too high, and his hands are not keeping opponents off of his chest. And if an offensive lineman gets inside of you and gets into your chest, it is game over. Because you can hold inside. Once you get inside, it is a blank check to hold as much as you want. You can't hold outside, but if you get your hands in, you can grab them by the chest plate, and it's just going to be game over. You're not going to win in those situations. So he has to do a much better job of controlling his pad level, trying to play a little bit smaller and not allow that surface area, because he just plays so far upright, and it just makes it an easy, easy target for offensive linemen. Showed off an impressive spin move at a 24.2% win rate on true pass sets in 2025. Does fall off of tackles a bit too often. Despite him being 6'6", 256, I do not think he's going to consistently hold up as an edge rusher in the NFL. He struggled with it again, in large part due to the fact that he plays too high, doesn't play with great leverage, and opens up his chest far too often. Needs a better pass rush plan. Need to see him convert speed to power much better. I like him better as a 4-3 defensive end than a 3-4 outside linebacker. Doesn't have ideal bend to get around the edge. He's going to need some time to refine his technique and try to get the most out of his skill set. He's got extreme athleticism, but I didn't think the testing always matched the tape. I thought the testing was better than what the tape showed. He's got a career 19.4% missed tackle rate, which is on the high side, again, falling off some of those tackles. Here's the thing, though, all right? If I told you that you have a very productive player, okay? He had, 51 pressures this past year, 96 pressures over the last 2 years. He's playing at a big school. And he's a freak athlete. So you got productivity, high-end school, extreme athlete. That's like a first-round pick like every day of the week. Yet this guy's probably going in the third. The good news is he's got insane athleticism, high productivity, and he played at a big-time school. That's a great trio. The bad news is you watch his tape and you're just left wanting a whole heck of a lot more. I think there's so much meat on the bone here for Dennis Sutton. And I know Justice liked him quite a bit. Normally, these type of athletic profiles at defensive end work out very, very well. And that he's got that going for him. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time. And it's crazy. Because, again, if you say productivity, big time school, and that athletic testing, it's almost always going to be a first round pick. And I think he's going to go in the third. So I don't think he's going to be in play at 52 for Green Bay. Maybe if they move down. He's a very fun and exciting player that if all of a sudden it clicks for him and things hit, look out, because you know, a couple of years, when he's a couple of years older, I could see him being a really, really impressive edge player. Just might take a little bit of time. So those are the ones I went through. Again, Zion Young, Gabe Akas, Derek Moore, Malachi Lawrence, R. Mason Thomas, and Danny Dennis Sutton. Let me know which one is the one for you, which one you like, which one you'd like to see the Packers take, or if you have no interest in edge at 52, let me know that too. Hit me up in the comments below. That's all I have for today. Nothing else too crazy. Again, happy hour on Friday. And again, get set for those live draft shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday of next week. And again, we'll probably be doing some other fun stuff as well. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, David McCluskey, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winklesingle, the Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Devin Lane, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Steve Bates, John Mark Liddell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, Zilch Zillardson, Large Charles, Will Glass, Imperium Collectibles, Carlo Delgado, Benjamin Sargent, and Jay Stanley. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.